Auto Line After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone, your journey, our passion, and by Chevrolet. Chevy runs deep.
This is Auto Line After Hours with Peter DiLorenzo, episode 170 for Friday, October 26, 2012. Taking the pulse of the ad biz.
Watch Autoline After Hours live at autoline.tv every Thursday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time or 2200 GMT. You can subscribe to this podcast for free by searching for Autoline in iTunes, Stitcher, or by following the links on our website.
Hey, hey, welcome to another scintillating episode of Autoline After Hours. Joining me tonight is Gene Halliday.
Hello.
Hello, Gene. Welcome from Auto Adopolis, correct? And my good old friend, Mark LeNave.
Hi, Peter.
A veteran of this business who's one of the smartest guys in the room on a daily basis, and pleased to have him here with us.
Thank you.
Welcome. And before we get into it, I have some house cleaning things to do. We're going to talk about the state of automotive marketing and look at some of the cool ads and just talk about, in general, the direction of that part of the industry. As you viewers or listeners know, I spent 22 plus years doing that. Gene spent a lot of years covering the business. Mark was CMO of General Motors, and then he went to become CMO of Allstate, so we're going to get his perspectives of both sides of that fence. Mark's now with Team Detroit, the Ford's huge ad agency, so we'll have a lot to talk about. But before we do that, we have to announce the winners of our Ford Focus ST giveaway. And all we ask you to do is send us an email, and we put all your names in a hat. So this is me going in the hat and figuring out who won. So I'm not looking, blah, blah, blah. Our first winner, Louis Alcala from Tampa, Florida. Way to go, Louis.
Yay!
Louis. And let's see, I'm going as fast as I can here. Al Jadzak from Lake Orion, Michigan.
Whoa.
All right.
The third winner is Craig Smith from Englewood, Colorado.
Nice place.
Yeah, it's a nice place. And Brad Wandry from Coutts, Indiana. And our last winner, I think that's it, right? That's four. There's one more.
Yep, one more.
I hope I'm pronouncing his first name right. Jay Kong from Novi, Michigan. So congratulations to everybody. We'll get these models out to you, sooner or later, whenever. And now, if you didn't win one of those, here's another chance to win something even cooler, I would venture to guess. And this is an Auto Extremist t-shirt, and let me just tell you why this is special. The purple shirts are rare, and they're pretty hard to get because they don't exist. This is the last of the batch, and it's got our old school type on it, and it's got, of course, our famous theme line on the back. So this is cool. And the trivia question, there'll be three winners for these. We've got three shirts tonight. This one will take some skill, and kudos to you if you don't have to Google this, but who won the 1965 Indianapolis 500? Who crewed his car, and why was the win significant? And so we'll get back to you later. Submit your answers to viewer mail at autolinedetroit.tv. We'll choose the correct answer at random at the end of the show. I mean, we'll choose three correct winners. And once again, that's viewer mail, autolinedetroit.tv. All right, here we go. So, Mark, you went from GM to Ford, right, to Volvo?
Yeah, GM to Volvo. Then
back to GM,
then to Allstate, now back to Team Detroit, which is WPP company, but obviously our job is we exist to service the Ford business globally.
So the thing I liked about when, you know, Mark's an old linebacker, and I know when he went to Allstate, all of a sudden I started seeing Allstate all over the football games. I don't know if you remember, but the nets behind the goalposts and the college games at Allstate and the bowls, and you were pretty active. But, you know, Gene and I have known you in the auto biz. How was it different in that part of the business, the insurance business?
Insurance business. Well, it's an interesting business. And by the way, the Fuel Gold Nets program Allstate was in about 80 or 90 colleges. It was a great program. It was started before I got there, so I can't take credit for that. It was actually started by like a young intern. He kind of modeled it on his desk, and then the team went out and sold those into colleges, college by college.
That's cool.
We did expand it, included Mayhem, did the whole Mayhem campaign, had him do in-game referee type of stuff.
But you were there when Mayhem was developed.
Yeah. We developed Mayhem right after I got there as a deep positioning campaign to try to combat, you know, the big heavy ad spend that Geico and Progressive had, who were very good competitors. But in the insurance space, it's quite different in a couple respects. The product is invisible. It's a service product. Basically, you know, auto insurance is what you see so much advertising on. You've got a direct model where, Geico and Progressive primarily play. State Farm, Allstate, Nationwide are more in the agent model. Just the economics of it make it so that they've got considerably more Geico, say considerably more advertising dollars to spend than the comparable agent model, because the agents are paid commissions to service the customers. It's a different model, so it's fiercely contested because loyalty rates in that industry are like 88%. So if you get a customer, you're likely to keep them for 5, 10, 15, 20 years. So you see, that's why you see so much insurance advertising. And sales and marketing make a big difference because the product is very similar company to company. They're all kind of assessing risk in similar ways. And it was very unique industry to be in. I learned a lot. Hotly contested, very measurable in terms of allowable cost spend, which in the auto industry is hard to do because of the effective incentives. You can measure incentive spend pretty well, but not so much advertising spend. So I learned a lot and had fun, but I missed the car industry the whole time, so I'm glad to be back.
Yeah, well, the advertising was great. I mean, the Mayhem thing was really good, and I know that the Flow character is hugely popular for Progressive, right?
Yeah, and if you think about it, Mayhem we had a blast with. We had the campaign using Dennis Haysbert, which was very effective. It was called Our Stand campaign. He had been the spokesperson for 6 years when I got there, and he's still... Actually, the whole time Mayhem was used, Dennis, the Haysbert work was still there and very effective. Mayhem really got it really caught on virally. It had 20 million YouTube views, but Flow was a good campaign for Progressive. Then think about Geico. So you had 20 years ago, some CMO sitting with his agency said, we're going to use a lizard as your spokesperson. And so you had some courageous CMO said, okay, we'll try that. And it's become one of the big icons in advertising and, has been, part of the, obviously helped fuel their growth over the last several years. So it was interesting, quite different business. And I enjoyed it a lot, but I'm glad to be back.
Yeah, and now you're back. And the interesting thing is you went over to the dark side. you're from where Gene and I hang out, the ad side. And that's got to be a big change for you.
Yeah, it's funny is that, our business, the Team Detroit or Global Team Ford, what I run, which is not just Dearborn, but our operations in London that service Ford to Europe, Sao Paulo that serves Latin and South America, Shanghai with Asia Pacific, and our Lincoln agency in New York, we service Ford and support for the marketing and selling of Ford vehicles. So that it's the car business.
Yeah.
So back in that comes back immediately. I missed it. And, the ebb and flow of it and the mechanics come back immediately. It's the agency side is different.
Yeah.
It's a different view. I like it a lot. And I joke the biggest difference is when you're on the client side, you worry about your business.
Yeah.
Agency's going to do what they're supposed to do. When you're on this side, I worry about my business and Ford's business. I have two businesses to worry about. Yeah. But they're great. It's a great brand, two great brands, Ford and Lincoln, great people at the company. They've obviously got a lot of respect. They haven't gone through the whole economic downturn that they were able to do what they did and have rebuilt the, you know, really not just the company, but the, I mean, not just the complete product lineups, but the entire company. It's something to see. It's a great team to work with.
Well, that's good. We're happy you're back in town and, you know, back in the thick of the fray.
Great.
So, Gene, what's new with you? What have you been noticing lately that you want to talk about?
Well, there's launches out there, obviously. There always are.
We have some files to talk about in particular, but we can just...
But I'm very disturbed that, in general, I think car advertising is just so-so. It's not... It's mediocre. It's been that way. And why is that? I don't know. And so, really, there's just so much that just doesn't break through. It's boring. It's... Why can't they get... up the level?
Well, you know, there's a few standout spots in recent times.
Absolutely.
But that's, you know, you're talking about the top percentile of creative. I think, you know, the old adage that clients get the ads they deserve is pretty true. I mean, if there's turmoil on the client side, there's hand-wringing, there's clashes in strategic direction, things tend to go south, you know, and advertising creative becomes compromised. It's very, very difficult to get a spot through untouched with the creative premise pretty much as is. I mean, it's just too many hands
too
on
too many layers of approval.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Too many layers.
And
I think that that's hard for companies to let go of. And, you know, that's, to me, in my experience, it was always like that. When you had someone like Mark or someone saying, you know what, I like it, let's go, it cut a lot of stuff out. But if you had the process where it goes up the ladder, then everyone takes a piece. And by the time it gets to the final sign-off, it's just like, yeah, it's okay.
And another problem, I think, too, is that they put people in those positions that are not, don't have advertising experience. You know, you've seen it over and over. Salespeople, finance people. You know.
Well, I think, you know, there was a point in the business where, especially GM, believed you rotated people through. Sure. And Chrysler did the same thing when I was running.
And Toyota.
Yeah, when I was running BBDO, it was creative. It was frustrating because they every 6 months or 8 months, they bring someone in. This is your new ad director, manager, whatever. And it's just like you'd have to retrain them almost every 8 months, and then it was 50-50 whether that client was going to be a good client or not.
Yeah, I think it's starting. You used to have the prevalence of that. As a matter of fact, when I became head of sales and marketing at GM in 2005, that job as it existed, there had been six or seven predecessors to that, and I was the only one that was a marketer in automotive sales by background. The rest were finance people or planning or come from some other discipline. I do think it's starting to change. You know, I'm thinking about my four clients. You know, Jim Farley is one of the best CMOs in the world.
Yeah.
Matt Van Dyke is critical in the process, came from an agency.
Yeah, no, it has changed.
So it's starting to change. And I think, you know, these are big bets. These cars are billion-dollar, multi-billion-dollar bets. And there's a, you know, high degree of risk with every one of them putting in, you know, it's a risk. Is it going to really sell and really hunt in the market? And when people are nervous about those kind of things, you get multiple layers looking in, you know, you'll tend to get, you know, you start working toward a safe bet on the advertising. And I think that the agency has a big responsibility there. And the unique model we have where we exist to serve Ford and we're very symbiotic in the relationship between the two of us cuts through a lot of that to the point you made earlier. So, you know, I've found that we're being encouraged to take risks. And some of it shows up where we think about TV so much, but, you know, we've taken a lot of risks in digital and branded content and those kinds of things.
Well, Ford's made a huge bet in social media, and that's led by Jim Farley. And, you know, it's paid off. It paid off in the Fiesta launch. They're doing it you know, this Ryan Seacrest
the
thing.
Fusion.
Random acts of fusion.
I mean, that's
great.
Huge visibility. And so, well, let's talk about, I'm biased, so I'm hosting the show, so I get to talk about ads I think are worth talking about. First one I'd like to mention, and you guys feel free to comment, is the campaign for the Cadillac ATS. Now, this is a tough row to hoe for Cadillac. I mean, let's face it, the BMW 3 Series is the acknowledged biggest competitor, the most successful, the longest history of success. And a lot of people, a lot of car companies have tried to knock the 3 Series off, or at least get in the game with the 3 Series. And I have to say, first of all, the ATS is a superb car. Kudos to the true believers at GM product development, because they did a great job. But this campaign, I think, really resonated, really made an impact. It ran on the Olympics, but it is, you know, they keep running it. And, you know, they spent a lot of money, but it shows up. I mean, the car deserved this kind of work. And I think they did a great job.
It's probably the best work for Cadillac in a long time. And it's good for them. It's good, you know, good to see them taking it up a notch.
And an old buddy of mine was one of the shooters, Jeff Swart. He always does superb work. So kudos to them. I think it was really, really well done. Did you like that, Mark?
Yeah, I spent a good part of my career at Cadillac. And, yeah. You know, we did the Led Zeppelin campaign back in 01.
Well, that's when you jump-started the brand.
Yeah.
And had a lot of success with it.
Yeah.
I agree with Gene. I thought this was the best work that I've seen out of Cadillac in quite a while. What it didn't do, though, was position the car in terms of the competitive set. And you know, if I would have been there, I would have been – somehow we need to know who the competitive set is here, because you can't tell how big – actually looks like a big car.
Yeah.
Which is good, except – then you're thinking it's a, you know, 5 Series competitor or something like that.
And, I think.
But I thought it was beautifully shot, well cast, you know, it had some stopping power in terms of the TV commercials you saw. So I thought it was definitely a big
you know,
step
I think it's skewed, it clearly skewed to the image wrangling more than, you know, let's set the table, let's set our competitor. And I think in this case, probably it was money well spent. And I think subsequently we'll see more head-to-head or other things, but I think as far as shifting Cadillac's perception out in the real world out there, I think it was pretty good.
It's not always smart to name your competitor in an ad. I mean,
I'm not
really
saying name the competitor, but price point, size, there should have been some indication
way.
In what segment, you know. That's just me. Maybe, you know, that doesn't mean the ad's not effective. I think it's, like I said, I think it's some of the best work they've done in a while.
Yeah, another ad, a commercial I really like, and frankly, I think it's the best thing Chrysler's done. You know, I'm not on the M&M or Clint Eastwood bandwagon at all. I thought the M&M spot was, you know, had its shelf life of about a month, and then Chrysler tried to make it 3 years. But anyway, the spot for the Dodge Dart, How to Change Cars Forever, I think is superb. And, you know, every time I see it, I mean, it really captures what's going on, but I almost would like to see a parallel spot in developing the actual advertising, because you could do a parallel spot and much of the stuff going on, the words talking about it, goes on in the creation of an ad campaign. So I just think this is superb work. I think this is the best stuff that has come out of on any Dodge or you know, Fiat product. I think this is the best. What do you think, Jim?
I also really, really liked it. I thought they did a really good job. And I do think that the Chrysler people are willing to take a chance.
Yeah.
And they don't always hit a home run.
Yeah.
But I they've done some other, you know, their Dodge work and their Ram work is also pretty much on message. And
yeah, except I don't like the Ram truck stuff. I guess
the
I'm
road kind of explore.
Yeah, the I Sam. Like. First of all, I like Sam Elliott, and he needs to go back to the movies. But I don't like the new launch campaign for the new truck at all. I just think it misses the mark. But this one, I think this one really, really does.
Yeah,
as well.
if you spend some time in Europe and see the car advertising in Europe, it's in general a lot more emotional, not as rational, a lot edgier. than similar car advertising in the United States. So you can see the influence, I think, of of the management team at Chrysler with the European influence kind of coming through some of these ads. And, you know, it remains to be seen whether that hunts in the U.S. or not, but it's certainly different and compelling in certain ways. Yep.
Yeah. This is a good time to take a break. Hey, Ben, let's hear from our friends at Bridgestone. Okay, we're back. What I think is really hot right now is the new campaign for the Ford C-Max. It's sort of out of the blue.
Literally.
Yeah, Mark's agency identified these Italian illustrators who did this for another product way back in 69. And guess what? They're still alive, and they still wanted to work on it. And I think it's very clever. You know, and I've stated this before about the C-Max. This is a vehicle that is going to surprise a lot of people. I think it's going to be very popular. It's one of these vehicles, when people see it, they say, oh, I get it. And I think the campaign is very engaging and interesting. I think appealing for a wide range of people, too.
He's not just saying that because you're here, because I agree with you.
I've known Peter long enough. He wouldn't.
Yeah, no.
He likes me, but not that much, okay? He's going to tell the truth. But
I'm sure the people out in Auburn Hills are going, what? Did he just say he liked her? Yes, I did like the Dodge Dart commercial.
We got a great creative director, Toby Barlow.
And
on all the Ford work, he searches the whole world for the best ideas. And he's got a process called Train that he uses rigorously. And, you know, because we've got a great resource within WPP, he'll even look outside. I thought these spots were great. And it really captured kind of the personality of the C-Max, which we feel is going to give us a great purpose-built hybrid, a very strong competitor to the Prius, and better fuel economy, better package, in my opinion. I'm biased, but the numbers don't lie. And I was with some dealers in California last week, and they're completely sold out, can't get enough. And we may, you know, really have a hit on our hands. So the advertising, I used to say, if the car's really good, you almost can't screw it up with the advertising. And if the car's a dog, there's almost nothing.
Can't fix it.
Aztec, there was no marketing that was going to fix Aztec, okay? It was dead on arrival. But, you know, this car, I think we got both. It's a great car. Great car, and I think we got great marketing.
Believe it or not, it's becoming a cult car.
You knew it would. Because it's just like there's certain dogs. It's so ugly, it's cute. You know, I forget what dogs are, but there's a lot like that.
Well, the old adage, in the old days of the business, it was if the car was successful, it was because, boy, we make damn good products. And if it wasn't, it's the ad agency's fault.
Yeah. That was always Lutz's opinion.
I have battle scars from presenting through the cigar smoke to Lutz, Iacocca, Ben Bidwell. I used to present through the cigar smoke and... Yeah. It was classic.
It didn't matter how high Iacocca got, he still retained advertising manager as part of his responsibilities.
I remember, I will refrain from war stories, but this is a good one. I did a spot for Dodge Daytona, and I had a long-haired actor in it. And I'll never forget it. I showed the spot, and Lee said, show it again, and I showed it, and no one says anything. And finally, Bob said, will someone please tell me why we have to have drug dealers in our commercials? And I'm like presenting this. Oh, okay. Well, no, it's, you know, it kind of appeals
to... Who cast him?
I said, I picked him. It appeals to different demographics. And Bob just didn't say anything. They sold it. But are you familiar with the Nissan, the tire pressure commercial?
Yes.
Okay.
They're doing some interesting work on
it. Yeah, they are. They're trying hard. I thought it was pretty interesting. And I also think, but consistently really creative stuff right now, I have to, this is the tire pressure. Oh, no, the Volkswagen. This is the tire pressure thing. Mm-hmm. But I'll tell you, consistently, I think doing the best stuff now is Volkswagen. I mean, they've got some great stuff. And this bulldog spot that swallows the keys, and he can't find the keys, so he takes the tug out to unlock the vehicle. I mean, what's the old adage? If you have cute kids and cute dogs or cats in your commercial, you're golden.
Right.
It works there, but I think
Tim Mahoney is a really smart marketing guy. You probably remember when he was at Subaru for a long time and really did a great job there.
And here he is. And, you know, I've talked to some people. They said they didn't know what the spot was about until finally they had to see it a few times. And they said, oh, I get it. But, you know, it's pretty good. But my favorite right now, which I think is just a brilliant spot, is the Volkswagen spot that just has people and kids, all age groups, laughing and smiling. And it's just superb. A real gutty spot to do. And not many manufacturers would even consider doing it. And I think it's resonated for the brand. It's memorable. It doesn't sell you anything. It just has a very succinct line. It's not the miles. It's how you live them at the end. It's just, you know, when it comes together like that, I have to, you know.
Well, part of it is you got to remember that the purpose of marketing and advertising is to sell a product. And part of that is where you are in terms of your favorability, your opinion, your momentum, you know, where you are as a company and a brand. Apple can do things right now in advertising that a lot of other tech companies wouldn't be able to pull off because of the tremendous momentum they got. And Volkswagen's in a place right now, and given they're not trying to sell full-size pickups and they're able to do things like this. And, you know, BMW, I felt like when you're in the luxury market, which I've been in most of my career, you know, you kind of have BMW envy. They do it well. I can't tell you they've got a history of great advertising. They got a great tagline, ultimate driving machine, and they consistently, the product and the message delivers on it. Now, is it advertising that wins a lot of awards? Probably not.
No. They went off the rails a couple years when they did the joy thing, and that was a dictate from Germany.
Yeah, I was shocked to see them do that.
And I talked to some dealers, and they were just outraged. They said, "We've been doing this for 25 years, and you want us to do joy? We have one of the greatest taglines in the history of the automobile business.
That people know." I mean, there's so many silly taglines that nobody knows what goes with what.
And, you know, they quietly backed away. They insist, well, we're not changing Ultimate Drive Machine, but that's not what the dealer said. The dealer said, you know.
When I saw that, I couldn't believe it. I just couldn't believe it because, I mean, you know, they're so efficient and so clean on their message. And then, you know, to try to enter into some other realm.
Yeah,
I understand.
That was a huge mistake. I mean, they even put joy on their America Le Mans Series 3 Series race cars, and it was just like, what are you guys doing? I mean, that's just...
And, you know, in the Audi work of the last, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 years, of they're almost the anti-German car. When I first saw it, it seemed almost silly to me, but then it sunk in. It took a while, and then it kind of sunk in what they were trying to do, and... They've been rolling pretty good, too.
Yeah, and they really were naming their competitors and making fun of their poking fun at their competitors.
Right.
And but Scott Kehoe, again, another smart marketing guy who's now been moved up the ladder. Good for him.
That's going to be interesting to see how that works for Scott. Johan Dennison, before him, I consider one of the brightest guys in the business. And he's a South African. And, you know, he could push back on the German managers, you know, just said, wait a minute here. And he could also really be tough on the dealers. You know, a lot of people didn't like Johan, dealers, but they grudgingly had respect for him because he was inevitably right. You know, that's a big challenge for Scott. You know, I don't know Scott very well. He's a bright guy, but that's going to be a very
interesting
challenge. But Audi's done some great work. Of course, you know, now this is a brand that... was the second tier behind Mercedes and BMW forever, and they just made a calculated decision that they were going to change that.
Yep.
And it's taken them 12 years, but they've stayed on message. They decide, well, we're going to go racing, we're going to go win Le Mans, we're going to establish ourselves, and lo and behold, here they are. They are on the top tier now.
Yeah, no, they've done a really nice job. And I mean, I was looking, you know, for 3 years I was out of the industry, and so I wasn't staring at data. And I come back, and they're like neck and neck with Cadillac right in sales. And you know, when I was a Cadillac, I sold Audi 10-1. So you know, they've done a nice job, and they got nice products too.
Yeah, and more products. They have more products.
Yeah, they got a lot of stuff.
And it all comes down to that. I call it the focus consistency of the message. You got to stay on message, and it's very easy, especially in this town. You know, people have a tendency to look at their watches and say, "Well, you know, Well, what happens?" And I've written about this. What happens in this business is internally, people are involved in the launch of a car. You know, 2-3 years ahead. The marketers are 2 and 3 years ahead of when the car hits. Then the agency gets involved, and you know, right in lockstep with marketing. And you develop campaigns and strategies and this and that. And the problem is by the time the car launches, everyone's tired of the marketing. I mean, or the advertising. It's just like, well, wait a minute. And then, you know, you always want to give them a big time out and say, well, wait a minute. The advertising hasn't even run yet. You have to stay with this. You got to. And I must say, you know, Ford's getting better at it. I don't know about Chrysler. They tend to go wherever the wind blows. GM only intermittently shows that they can stay with something. But that's the key. That's why Audi's been successful.
Yep.
That's why BMW's been successful. Of course, you have to have the product. That goes without saying. But you can't waver from the message, because eventually people remember it.
Yeah, well, and in the auto industry, you know, continuous improvement and staying on message over time, because these are expensive products, take up a good chunk of average American's household income to buy a new vehicle. So they're big decisions. So building that trust factor over time works. Like, you know, I always felt like kind of the Japanese mindset of just continuous, tiny, incremental improvement, weren't risk takers, that it worked at building Honda and Toyota over time. They continuously improved, you know, one successive model, especially the one Camry, next generation Camry. Nothing spectacular in terms of, you know, big risks, you know, in either the design or the constant continuous improvement, so people, you know, knew what to expect.
And that worked.
It works in a long window of time.
Yeah,
but probably not the advertising in their case, really.
No. And it worked for
the
a while.
Products.
Yeah.
The products and the buzz.
And until the Koreans came.
Ah, yeah. A little
and
twist.
We should have mentioned the Korean Hyundai marketing and Kia marketing, some really creative stuff, but... you know, the Koreans sort of upset the Toyota and Honda's apple cart. And, well, everyone's looking over their shoulder now at the Koreans.
Well, it took them a while, but they're
legit, and they're very good. And, you know, what I've admired about Ford is that they've took some risk in the design, but an appropriate level of risk. The cars look different. They don't look like they just, you know, it's whatever looked like it came out of a wind tunnel, which you see in a lot of... You know, a lot of the shapes, especially in mid-sized cars, the new Fusion as an example, really has a lot of edge to the design, but appropriate. So Hyundai and Kia have done that too. They've got, you know, they've taken some edge in their design, and it stands out. So and they've done, a pretty good job marketing it.
Well, the thing about the Koreans is it seems like every new product is better than the one before. I mean, and not by a little bit. And each new product sends another message that, you know, they get it. They're going to get better. They're going to continue to improve. We're seeing it. Toyota's sort of got their mojo back in the sales. And Honda, you know, the Accord's taken some shots for being boring. But believe me, they're going to sell the hell out of a new Accord. You can just bet on that.
It won't be the advertising.
No. Now, occasionally Honda used to come up with a whimsical, fun ad, but you just don't see it anymore. Mm-hmm. It's like they don't even try. Well, anyway. Let's see what else. Okay, the Acura stuff. I only mention that because they've got... they've got our Lions All-Pro receiver in it, that one Acura.
Oh, yeah, Calvin.
Calvin, and he goes from football gear to a suit. But it doesn't translate to the car at all. I just mentioned because Calvin's on there.
They're sort of lost in space most of the time. I don't really understand it. They had some some decent advertising for, you know, a minute, and then it's like wallpaper.
I've been critical of Acura for a long time because, you know, it's just, why? What is Acura? And if it's supposed to be the ultimate Honda, then why doesn't the product seem like it is? And I think they have the table set for them to say, this is the ultimate expression of Honda, of the motor company, our capability, our philosophy, and then it just doesn't translate. I don't understand. There's the Calvin spot. So,
I don't know if I'd have picked a brown suit, you know, I'm not sure. I mean, but hey, you know, I just don't wear brown suits.
They have design issues. They have identity issues. They haven't alighted on the design that just says Acura.
Right.
I mean, I remember when the reinvention of Cadillac, I remember being at the Detroit Auto Show when they showed the Evoque, and everyone was just like, oh, wow. I mean, that's like radical. But here we are. People know what the face of Cadillac is on the road, but it took a long time.
Yeah.
Acura's still fumbling around.
Yep.
They still haven't figured it out. And now, you know, speaking of that, you see the new Lexus face, which is interesting, but you know, I don't know. It, you know, the marketing and advertising, you have to have good products. There have been moments in history when you overcome just having a mediocre product and the advertising has made a huge difference. And the classic one was Hal Reiney.
Saturn.
Right.
Saturn was a nice car, nothing special. But by the time Hal got through with it, it was the greatest thing since sliced bread.
But what they were also selling was the
no dicker sale,
right? And just the customer service. And those Saturn dealers were awesome.
Yeah,
let's face it.
But the people forget what a phenomenon it was. I mean, it was on the cover of Time, and it, I forget, sold 300,000 of that. Wasn't even a really good car. You know, big giant gaps because of the plastic panels.
It's just an average car.
But the advertising, in my opinion, was brilliant. I mean, we spent a lot of time. We were trying to revive Saturn, looking back at those old ads and trying to recapture that in a more contemporary way. This is just a few years ago. And if you go back and look at those ads, with remember the one where the kids going to eating the donuts.
People remember that stuff.
Clapping in the showroom. And it was brilliant. You know, so I've been involved with some. I wasn't involved with that, boy, back with Saturn. But, I mean, in my mind, that's one of the great all-time iconic campaigns. Chevy Like a Rock was one of the all-time iconic campaigns. And but there's only been a handful, you know, to your earlier point, in the auto industry. And that's not to say that you have to have one. You know, I think, you know, like I said, pounding away at a consistent message works, too, over time if the product delivers on it. But it sure helps when the marketing is really rolling too. You know, you got aim high.
Yeah, he created an aura for the brand. I mean, and it was a textbook thing. I mean, it was because it was an average car, but he created this aura that people bought into. And what was this, you know, like 70% of the buyers or something didn't think that it had any relation
to GM.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Or maybe it's even higher than that.
Although we did a survey one time and 14% didn't connect GMC with GM. So it's just kind of.
Wow, really?
It was something like that.
Wow.
But, you know, it's you know, I don't think there's any quite, you know, one way to skin the cat. Built Ford Tough is was good with that great mnemonic at the end and using, you know, it's, you know, using, you know, art instead of, you know, real live footage in the ads is. Ford's gained, F-150's gained 5-6 points of market share in the last, you know, 3-4 years of the truck segment. So there's a lot of different ways to get at it, but.
Yeah, that.
But like you said, consistency.
Yeah,
and,
consistently pound away. Of course,
you know, that campaign.
EcoBoost has helped a lot.
Yeah, well, that campaign was really, we should have mentioned that. I mean, that was a radical campaign and the use of Dennis Leary. And it was visually.
The animation. And,
visually, you know. Totally different. Walked to a different drummer. And, you know, and that was a risky campaign because that, you know, that's the number one selling vehicle in the U.S. And
but so consistent that when you see it, you know.
You know.
You know it's for Ford truck.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey Ben, let's hear from our other friends and sponsors tonight from Chevrolet.
it was more than a car to him. It really was his baby.
Oh, no. That's my old Chevy. Dear God.
Okay, I'm going to restate the question, the trivia question for our Auto Extremist t-shirts, and it is this. Who won the 1965 Indianapolis 500? Who crewed his car, and why was the win significant? Email us at viewermail@autolinedetroit.tv. So I think we're getting to the point where we could probably do a rapid fire, Ben, and we can get some questions from our audience.
Well, he did voiceover for Pontiac Bonneville when I was a Bonneville brand manager. Sylvester Stallone.
Yeah, man. Okay, we've got a... Hey, Ben, let's do a phone call first. Let's change it up a little bit.
I just wanted to make a quick comment. I'm from New Jersey, but not old Topan, New Jersey. Had a quick question about the Mustang and how they could be, that it could be updated, especially in the suspension so that it compete with the M3. There's been a lot of discussion, especially in Europe, in reference to its competitiveness, especially as the objective is going out in 2013, 2014 to export that there. I'd love to hear from you. Thanks.
Well, the first thing to understand about the new next generation Mustang, it'll be the first time that it is projected globally. It is designed to compete around the world. And I don't think it's a big secret that probably the big hand-wringing thing for enthusiasts about the rear suspension, that's going to be addressed. So I think Ford's confident that they can sell Mustang globally, and the new car will certainly look advanced and set the tone for Mustang for a new generation. So we'll see how they do it. Hey, Ben, let's get another call in.
Hi, this is Jeff W. from Albany, New York. In a recent article about Lincoln in the Detroit News, it was mentioned that Ford has even been toying with the idea of changing the name of the Lincoln division. Mark, anything you can comment on? Thanks, bye.
Yeah, I don't recall the article. I've seen quite a few articles about Lincoln as we're starting to get ready to relaunch the brand, but no truth to that statement. It's still going to be the Lincoln brand. We are going to reintroduce the brand as the Lincoln Motor Company, but the vehicles will all be branded Lincoln. It's a great historic name. We're looking at this as a renaissance and kind of a hello again to America of the Lincoln brand. It was got such a rich history. We've explored it in great detail in terms of thinking about the relaunch, the marketing in line with the first new product up, which is MKZ, which is a spectacular product. And they'll definitely be marketed as Lincolns.
Yeah. So Ray Schaefer says, hi, Peter, Gene, and Mark. We love war stories, Peter. They're the best and most entertaining. It's wonderful to hear the great names like Iacocca again. Thanks, Ray. I will only bore people occasionally with them because they go on forever. Odin asks, what does the panel think of using jingles to sell cars, like the new Prius campaign, Prius for Everyone, and how effective is it? Now, isn't that the woman that did the music, the song in Juno?
I mean, it seems so 50s, doesn't it? Really? Jingles? You know?
Yeah, you know, I guess I would probably agree with you, except there's always one piece of music that comes along
right
that could work.
Yeah,
and it depends on the vehicle.
Well, yeah, it's like I said, it's not, I don't think there's one formula. I'd mentioned, I thought, I wouldn't characterize a jingle, but the Like a Rock, the Seeger music was, I think,
that's iconic,
brilliantly used.
Like,
we use Zeppelin for 4 or 5 years. Could we have used it for 20? No, we might have even hung in there a year more than we should have, but we changed it. We ended up just stinging out the ads with a mnemonic at the end, and I think it just depends, you know.
But a jingle sounds very...
Jingle sounds old. Although we had some fun with Allstate with you're in good hands with Allstate. We started doing a little bit of that, like, digitally, and in TV just to kind of, like, we didn't even say the words. We just
Dennis Haysbert also said, yeah, he would just say, you're in good hands.
You wouldn't walk away from,
you know,
that.
Some of these things stay with you, but we did it more as a
more modern,
a whimsical, modern type of thing.
Rum and Coke asks, is the Audi message of Vorsprung durch Technik really good for people who do not speak German? No, probably not, but, you know, Audi will do what they want anyway. I think the reason Audis resonate with the American public is that, number one, the cars are distinctive on the road, and again, they don't waver from their message, and, you know, they use that theme, the German theme, but I don't think American consumers even bother to worry about it. Scotty in Cleveland asked, for me, do you recall the Ford Just Wave Hello campaign? And if so, what was your opinion of it? I don't remember that. Is that recent? That's not recent.
It's not recent.
Just Wave Hello. My favorite campaign of all, one of them of all time, was for the introduction of Honda motorcycles in the U.S. You meet the nicest people on a Honda.
Great line.
It's beautiful. Yeah. Great. They should bring that back, by the way. Rum and Coke, best Chrysler ad, Fiat 500 A-bars with the ultra-hot Italian supermodel. More of those, please. Yeah. I'm already tired of that. I was tired of that when they first did it.
But it makes sense. It's an Italian brand.
Yeah.
J-Lo did not make sense.
You noticed the Fiat commercials. Notice them.
But they didn't start out great.
No.
Dr. Botox says, local dealers often undermine the national campaigns. A local Cadillac dealer has a very loud radio and TV ad hyping low, low lease payments for a stripped ATS. It's awful. Well, you know, I've said this often in my column. I mean, you can research, you can strategize, you can have brilliant marketing strategy, execution, everything. And Mark, you know this, it can all come apart in 10 minutes at a dealer, you know?
Yeah, but the what we found over time, the research, is that if you know you're only in the market for a car at a given time, right, in a given window, and you almost, the brand stuff has an impact on you, the launch material, the overall presentation of the brand, whether it's digitally, TV, radio. When it's a tactical, if you're not in a market, you almost tune it out. And then increasingly, the part of the business that changed the most in the 3 years I was gone was the role of digital. And I would say within 5 years, almost all dealer spending will be in the digital space. Very few will be on television, in the newspaper. It's going to all be search, third-party sites, lead management, generating leads, and more of them, more they're transitioning that way anyway, so that, you know, you'll have the more of a focus on tier one, awareness of the product, building your brand, launch spots, and then the dealers will be, you know, generating, you know, a lead or interest or, an inquiry to the dealer, and then them picking it up through, you know, really good, solid processes.
The smart,
I know we're working on that. Smart ones are there.
I'm already there.
I was a Ford dealer, a couple, you know, Ford dealers in California and New York recently that are state of the art in terms of handling the digital space, following up with both sales and service. Absolutely state of the art. I was amazed. It's really changed a lot in just three years. That's how fast things are moving.
Yeah. Here's one for you, Mark. Mitch W. asks, what does the NFL mean to car advertising?
It's if you're a mainstream brand, and if you're a brand that's...
You got to be there.
You know, Ford, Chevy, Toyota, you got to be there. It's
the most watched,
the appointment television. You think about it today. You've got the sports and reality shows. Okay, you got some other shows that are doing okay, but it's not like 10 years ago. And you know, so if you really want to get eyeballs, of America, you know, you got men, but you also got a lot of female NFL enthusiasts. You got to be on the NFL. It's appointment television.
Yeah. Let me see what else we have here.
Especially the Steelers.
Andrew Charles asks, is there more to the GM-PSA joint development programs than what they've announced? I can't see where they think the savings will come from if Opel is simply developing models with PSA and not the rest of GM. Why is there no mention of Chevrolet and Buick small and mid-sized cars?
You know, I don't know. That's a Hail Mary play over there for GM. They have to make it work. I don't think it's going to work. You know, they have deliverables. They expect new product by, what was it, 2016? But, you know, that conveniently forgets the fact that the two organizations need to mesh well enough to focus on vehicles to deliver to market in the segments they're talking about. And that's not always guaranteed. Look what happened when the Germans from Mercedes came over and took over Chrysler. I mean, there was a lot of issues there. So,
well, and look at the other joint ventures GM has had with the Europeans. Not exactly great results.
Yeah. Okay, let's see. Rum and Coke likes the Fiat Abarth ad. Scotty and Cleveland likes the Fiat 500 that drives off the cliff and then, you know, drives over the US. I didn't really like that much. I wrote this week, my column was about that Chevrolet is going to do the accepted way of pre-launch for the Corvette. And my point was, you don't need to do that. You need to really pull back on the info for the Corvette and not say anything. I'm waiting for a manufacturer to do this. You know, it's going to be revealed Sunday night, January 13th, at a special event before the opening of the media preview days in Detroit. And if no one knew a damn thing about it before that night, I think it would be an explosion. But instead, they're kind of, oh, we're going to have a little teaser video here. They showed the engine this week. I just think, wow, this car deserves to be just, here it is, wow. And
using, as you mentioned earlier, using digital space, the flow of information now that's so readily available to pre-launch a car is, in general, a good idea. Ford has done a great job with it. Corvette, you don't need your Corvette's Corvette. So, I mean, they're going to sell their 40,000 a year unless they really screwed it up, and it would get all kinds of attention. So, I mean, that's one you really wouldn't have to. You could argue either side of it, but I read your column. I thought you made a lot of good points. I mean, it's Corvette is a different thing.
It's a different thing. And there's two iconic nameplates in this country when it comes to automobiles. One's Corvette, and the other's Mustang.
Yeah, exactly.
So I'm hoping our friends over in Dearborn take a good, long, hard look. And when they, you know, if I was doing the Mustang, there would be a single-page newspaper ad 1 month before. I think the anniversary of the Mustang is April 17th.
50th, yeah.
Yeah, on March 17th, I would put an ad that just says April 17th, 2014. And have a little Ford thing at the bottom and nothing. No long lead, no nothing, no, oh, come in under the tent, we'll show you the car for select meeting, none of that. And on April 17th, have some mega event.
So if I recommend that to my Ford clients and they don't like it, I can blame it on you?
Yeah, you can blame it on me.
Perfect.
Because they'll probably
I do that
it.
Today anyway. Yeah. I said, you know, I read that in Auto Extremist. Yeah. Sorry, that was a dumb idea.
So, Ben, we only have one winner in the trivia contest?
Looks like that's the case.
Wow. Come on, people out there. You got to fire up your Google. You can. We have one winner, Al Jadzak. He already won a car in the drawing, so boy, he's got a big night.
He's on a roll.
Yeah. Al from Lake Orion says, call me old school, but when I was a kid, I had such a crush on Dinah Shore, and I love to see the USA in your Chevrolet ads, and would like to see that come back again in a more modern theme. Well, you know, listen, Chevrolet has had some of the most iconic car campaigns in history. See the USA, baseball hot dogs, apple pie. The Heartbeat of America was at the time a sensation. You know, the Like a Rock thing was for truck, but still, Chevrolet has had some iconic campaigns. And, you know, back then they were more than just campaigns because remember, GM controlled 50% of the market. There were like three TV channels.
Yep.
And, you know, Chevrolet would, you'd watch Bonanza. And then the last 5 minutes, they'd unveil the new Chevrolet lineup. I mean, it was a huge deal. So I don't know if we'll ever see that again.
Well, they did bring it back a few years back, but it was only very briefly.
Actually, I think they might have run a version in the playoffs this year.
They had Prince Fielder singing it.
Yeah.
So it's been back, yeah. It's not a
I just want him to hit well tonight. I don't care if he sings.
Yeah,
I just want him. I want him to win. I'm a Steelers fan. I'm a big Tigers fan.
Yeah, they got to win.
Last night was disappointing.
Oh, boy, it was disappointing. What's up, Jay?
Don't give the answer. We'll let the podcast listeners try to get the answer.
Okay. Okay, yeah, I'm not going to give you the answer, so.
Ask Al.
Yeah, we'll get the shirts out to you. So I think, well, we got a few more minutes. Let me see what else are they asking.
You know what ad I thought was really cool, just to bring up another category, during the Olympics, which...
There was some good stuff on the Olympics.
Yeah, there was some pretty good stuff. But the one, I think it was AT&T, and I was going to tell you, sometimes the ads can be great. You don't know who did them. Where the one swimmer... The one young American, the 17-year-old that was winning a lot, she just won with her time was 2 minutes. And it cut to an AT&T commercial where they're looking at their Galaxy phone, the gal, like a young swimmer in her kitchen, and she's looking at the live stream, which you had just saw. Now, you had a six-hour time delay to do this. And she goes to the board and writes 1 minute and 59 seconds. And I thought it was, because it happened coming right in the next commercial pod, I thought it was very cool. So, and I think we'll start seeing some things with more live
interaction
on television,
media, yeah.
You know, real-time social network interaction type of things. I think you'll start getting into that space to try to connect television to the digital world because all the big broadcast companies are thinking about it.
Yeah, TV.
It's a dual media world now.
Here's another one, and it's near and dear to my heart, but Ray in Florida, you think it's possible to bring back a niche product like a Pontiac Trans Am and then market and sell it through, say, a GMC dealer? Could a good marketing team make that work? Well, I hated to see Pontiac go. I've worked on Pontiac, and it was one of GM's storied brands, and actually one of America's storied brands, but I don't know if it could be brought back. I mean, I don't see it happening anytime soon.
Because it would compete with the Camaro.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. I just...
No, that won't happen.
Yeah, it's too bad. It's really too bad. And the other, you know, frankly, Hummer, if GM had stuck with Hummer and they'd gone to that H4, the smaller one, they'd still be...
If Katrina didn't happen, Hummer would still be a brand.
Right.
Katrina happened, fall of 05. Everybody forgets gas doubled overnight. Right. Environmentalism became, you know, passionate, and so it became the poster child for, you know, the environmental and the green movement. And it was, you know, it was a big, you know, gas-guzzling truck. And,
yeah.
You know, but people, it happened overnight with Katrina, and trucks stopped selling, and Hummer took it, you know, took it, I think, right in the chops. And there was lots of other products out there that had equally poor fuel economy, including a lot from the Germans.
But it became the poster boy. Well, you were at GM then.
Yeah, I was at GM when it happened. But it was smoking hot for a while. And then, you know, it all changed with Katrina. And the industry then was running 18 million units and went down to about 13. It was all truck volume that bled off. And then in 08, it melted. Everybody thinks it all happened in 08. It was about a four-year burn that was...
Yeah.
It was very difficult.
One of my all-time favorite car spots was the Happy Jack.
Yeah.
That was a great spot. That was a great
Hummer.
Spot. Hummer did great work.
Yeah,
you know,
they
time.
Did great work. Well, we've reached the end of the road here. Another episode, and I'd like to thank Gene Halliday
for being here. Thanks.
From autoadopolis.wordpress.com. And Mark, always a pleasure. Welcome back to the city.
Fun to be here. Talk about this time.
We're glad you're back in the fray. And, you know, if you want to read up, we just gave you Gene's address again. I'll give it to you again, autoadopolis.wordpress.com. You can get all my stuff, of course, at autoextremist.com. And I'm on Twitter, twitter.com/PeterMDLorenzo. And we are on Facebook. Auto Extremist is on Facebook also. And you can friend Autoline at facebook.com/AutolineNetwork, Or you can follow Autoline on Twitter at twitter.com/Autoline. And I'd like to thank everyone again for tuning in. And we really appreciate it. And we will see you in, we'll see you in the future. Thanks.
So I got the email today I got from Autoline. It's their 1,000th TV show.
Autoline Daily.
Autoline Daily. New... Well, congratulations to John for Autoline Daily's 1,000th.
Yeah, Ben, wait a second. Before you run, I should say Autoline Daily was the program that John and his crew started 1,000 episodes ago, and I filled in for John today. It was the 1,000th episode, and you know, they deserve a lot of credit. They work very hard.
Oh, yeah.
And it's become a staple on the internet, and people look forward to it. So kudos to them. And again, see you guys next time.
Go Tiger.
Autoline After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone, your journey, our passion. And by Chevrolet. Chevy runs deep.
Visit our website, autoline.tv, where you can watch us live Thursday nights at 6 p.m. Eastern. Get your daily news fix with Autoline Daily and in-depth analysis and interviews with Autoline This Week. There's all that and much more at autoline.tv.